Okay. I would now like to introduce our keynote speaker for this evening. Maria from Boston, would you please join us?
Hi, everyone. My name's Maria. I am a compulsive eater, bulimic, and restrictor, and I am so happy to be with you tonight. Hi! As I tell you my story tonight, I want to tell you a couple things. One, it will absolutely not be chronological. Two, there are things that I definitely will leave out that I wish I had said, or you would have wished I had said. It's possible. And three, no matter what I leave out, it is my sincere intention to mention every one of the 12 steps at least once. So this is where I need your help, okay? You didn't know this was going to be a participatory talk, did you? Okay, so every time I mention a step, I need you to go ding. Let's practice. Okay? I love step one.
Ding.
Oh, man, you guys. Okay. All right. So we're going to do that, and you're going to help me. And the goal at the end is to have mentioned all 12. Okay, can we do something together before I start, which only in English, please, for me. Let's say the Serenity Prayer together, and let's say it with a we instead of an I, okay? Okay. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thanks, everybody. Okay. So I'm going to start with a question that I asked my dear sponsor. I don't know, maybe 5 years ago. We've been together for 13 years, and we met at this convention 13 years ago. And I'd been to a lot of meetings, and in my 33 years in program, and I felt like I heard people saying over and over again, sharing at meetings, they were sharing about their abstinence, or losing their abstinence, or in a way that sort of sounded like they thought it was inevitable eventually. Like they thought it was, oh, well, I lost my abstinence again. You know, and with a face that said, I should have known it was coming. And I remember talking to Melissa, that's my sponsor, and asking her one day, why do you think this happens? Why do you think this happens? I said, and by the way, I've had plenty of relapses, and I'm going to tell you about them. But she said to me, Maria, I think it's because they don't know that truly how powerless they are. I think that's it. Oh, by the way, thank you. You don't have to ding like if I refer to a step. It's only like if I say step. Okay. Ding, see? So good. Okay. So she said to me, Maria, I don't think they know that they're really, really powerless. And that made me think of something in the big book. And it comes from the doctor's opinion. And it says, this is a paraphrase, okay? Men have cried out to me in sincere and despairing appeal. Doctor, I have everything to live for. I can't go on like this. One feels, the doctor says, something more than human power is needed to produce the essential psychic change. What is the essential psychic change? It is step one. It's going from a place of believing that I can control my eating, or my starving, or my throwing up, or my exercise bulimia, to a place of realizing I cannot do it. I cannot do it by my own power. I'll tell you a little bit about my step one. Oh, good job. There were many, because I have a history of relapse. But I'll tell you about the first one. So I came into program in December of 1991, when I was 23 years old. And this is how I got there. I'd heard about OA, and I sort of said, no way, I'm not doing that. And here was my job. I was working in a girls' boarding school in Southern California. My job was to go around and check the girls at night, say goodnight, make sure everything was okay. And I had to stay up till like midnight or something. That was one of the things I did. I also taught in the school. So I would come downstairs in my little apartment, and on the way, I would always grab something to eat, some candy. Luckily, one of the teachers who also lived in the dorm had a little candy shop for the girls. Wasn't that great? So I always had a source, right? God bless you, Sister Agnella. You didn't know you were my dealer. Okay. Anyway, one night I was doing what I had done many, many times before, which is sitting in my little chair in front of my little TV at about 1 o'clock in the morning, continuing to eat, continuing to put food in my mouth, and knowing it didn't feel good. And by the way, while I was doing this compulsive eating, I was also staying up and not sleeping. And by the way, I was not preparing my classes for the next morning. I was a brand new teacher. So at 3 a.m., sitting in my chair, waiting to be fired eventually, not being able to stop eating, I sat there and I said, you know what? People are put into hospitals for things like this. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I had heard about OA. And those were the days when you wrote a letter with a pen and you mailed it to a P.O. box and you got a letter back. And I did. And I was invited to a meeting in Southern California on a Friday night. I was told about that one. I was told about a few others. And I was sent a meeting list. So I went to that meeting. And I heard people tell my story. And here's what else I noticed at that first meeting. The skinny people were not the most popular people in the room. That had never happened before. People were being really nice to me. And the first time that I stood up and said, "Hi, I'm Maria. I got this far. And I started to cry. And the woman sitting next to me, whom I had never met before, put her hand on my knee and said, "You're going to be okay." So that's how I came in. And I want to let you know, too, besides the steps, getting slow. I also want to talk about the love in this program. Okay? So I'm going to talk about two things, the steps and the fellowship and sisterhood of this program. So I need them both. And they have both saved my life. The idea that one could walk into a room of people that she has never met before and find hugs and love and congratulations for coming in and hope. How amazing. How amazing. Can you remember your first meeting? Right? I want you to take a minute just to remember it. To remember what it felt like walking in the door. It might have been yesterday for some of you, I don't know. And think about how your life has changed. How your life has been saved. That's what I say every time, not every time, but often when I go to a meeting, I will introduce myself and I will say, "Thank you for saving my life today." We are saving each other's lives every minute. Every minute. That is incredibly important. So I was powerless over food. My life had become unmanageable. And so what did I need? I needed a power greater than myself. So I want to tell you that I was a person who really, really had no problem with the God stuff. It was all around me. And I was one of the lucky ones who grew up with a very positive experience. I loved God before I came in. Guess what? I had a master's degree in theology. Why do I tell you this? Because loving God my whole life and having a master's degree in theology did nothing for my compulsive eating. I always believed that God loved me. And please translate higher power, and I will do that. But the point is, I believed that it was my job to get thin. And that, in fact, if God wouldn't love me more, God would be prouder of me if I wore a size 6 instead of a size 16. And what I learned in program was, this is not a moral issue, compulsive eating. That is the most important thing I learned, because you know what? I had blamed myself my whole life, my whole long 23 years at that point, for anything I did with food. And I was sure there was something wrong with me. But when I heard that it was not a moral issue, that it was a disease, just like any other disease, my eyes were opened. And you know what I got to do? I got to stop hating myself. Oh, wasn't that good? I want to quote a friend of mine in program who always says, you know, I can't hate myself into loving myself. I can only love myself into loving myself. That has been true for me. But I digress. So, step two, ding. I want to tell you quickly about my step two experience, because I was talking about God, right? I was talking about God and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So, here's where I was. I was, again, 23 years old, Southern California, babysitting for one of my colleagues' kids. My job to give them dinner and then hang out with them. And as often happens, and I will mention foods in this because we live in a world where food actually exists around us. We need to deal with it. So they had ordered pizza, as often happens. And actually at that point in my life, that pizza was not a problem. And I decided I was gonna have whatever I was gonna have for dinner, two slices. And then we had dinner, and then the kids went and played, and I was in the kitchen with a half a pizza. Never in my life had I been left alone with a pizza and not chemically joined with it by the end of the night. Never. So I said to God out loud, well, God, they say you can do this. Let's see. So I said a little prayer, and you know what? At the end of the night, the pizza was in the fridge, and I was abstinent. That was my step two experience, my first step two experience. Okay, so I'm gonna go, oh, I turned a page too fast. Sorry, friends. And I need glasses. You know what? I didn't need glasses when I was 23. Okay. Yes. So the question is this: after step two, step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. So, how did I do that? I don't know. I don't know. But I know this, that this higher power had done for me what no one else could do. So why not give it a shot? And I saw people in the rooms talking about their higher power and talking about turning their lives over, and I wanted what they had. So I kept asking God to help me. I kept turning things over. I learned how to trust. And I learned how to trust not because it made sense to me. You know why I learned how to trust? Here we go. Because I saw other people trusting. I wasn't going to tell you this story tonight, but now I am. So I was in program for about a year. I was teaching, I was teaching still at this school, and I wanted to go teach at another school. I wanted to get out of that dormitory. I knew I wanted to stay in California, but I didn't know how was I ever going to get a job. I was so worried. Was I going to have to move back home? Could I afford an apartment? Blah, 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 blah. And a dear, dear friend in program said to me, God's going to give you a job. And I was like, what? And he said, God's going to give you that job. You're going to get it. And I said, how do you know? What? He said, do you believe me? I said, I'm not sure. He said, okay, if you don't believe me, can you believe that I believe that God is going to get you a job? And I said, okay. And I was convinced that I just loved this person. I trusted him. He had helped save my life. He was the one who, at my third meeting, by the way, said to me, so, are you a member of Overeaters Anonymous now? And I'm like, yes. Okay. So the fellowship, the love brought me in. And it wasn't just meetings, you know, in those days, like we went out to dinner together. And we went to the movies together, and I was invited. By the way, I had no friends because I had just moved from Boston to California, and suddenly I came into OA and I had like rooms full of friends. Yes, it's really good if you're struggling in your program or if you're having trouble connecting with people, move across the country. So anyway, the reason I'm telling this story is that he said to me, will you believe that I believe? And I said, yes. And I really, really believed him. So I went through the next 6 months. I had told them in December that I was finishing in June. And all the sisters in the school were like, Maria, did you find a job yet? Maria, did you find a job yet? Everybody's asking, did you find a job yet? And I'd say, no. Well, aren't you worried? I mean, it's getting close. Are you going to get a job? What do you think you're going to do? And I said, God's going to get me a job. I'm getting a job. And I am here to tell you that I signed the contract for my next teaching job the day I finished my other teaching job, the last day, because my friend said to me, you will have a job before this job is over. Okay? Turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood God. The care. The care. And the care of God, of the higher power, is what we all live out together. That's what we emulate. Okay, so, oh, I also want to say, by the way, that like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, I don't know how long until I had a very nice sponsor, by the way, but she wasn't very tough. And I said, I've got to change because I'm never going to do this Philippian fourth step. And so I was sitting at my home meeting and I heard a man as he got his 7-year coin. And I thought, that's impossible. And he said, do you know how I got this? And he was very like, persuasive. And he's like, he looked at us, he goes, do you know how I got this 7-year coin? How I got 7 years of abstinence? One day at a time. And there was something about it, right? He was just magical. And, you know, higher power is in the attraction. So I asked this guy, and he said yes. And by the way, he was there for my first relapse. And he taught every night. Boy, this talk is going, by the way, not at all the way I planned. Anyway, I was 6 months in program, and I had my first relapse. And probably because in California at that time, once you got a six-year chip, you could start speaking at meetings, right? So I'm sure I was like, okay, I got it. Now I can do this. I can tell everybody my story. But I know that's shocking to you because I was so shy. Anyway, I relapsed. And I was sitting in my little apartment in Pasadena, California, on the floor, calling my sponsor. I am totally have to fly. Okay, so calling my sponsor and saying, I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow I will be abstinent. And I did it like every night. And finally he said to me, Maria, will you do me a favor? And I said, yeah. He said, I want you to put your hands out like this, like you're going to receive something very important. And he knew that in my religious tradition, this meant something. And he said, now I want you to repeat after me. God, God. Oh, let's do it together. Ready? You repeat after me. God, please allow me to receive the gift of my abstinence today. He said to me, Maria, it is nothing that you do. It is nothing that you earn. It is a pure gift. Pure gift. Oh, I wasn't responsible for making sure I was abstinent? No. I still say that prayer every morning. So let's move on, okay? The fourth step.
Ding.
Apparently, there's a very small percentage of people in Overeaters Anonymous who work the steps beyond the third step. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, so a fearless and searching moral inventory. People are like, I heard people going, oh, it's gonna be so hard. I'd go to meetings and I'd hear people say, I've been working my third step for 3.5 years. And I remember saying, no. And my sponsor said to me, he said, Maria, it is not a novel. Write it down and be done with it. And I said, but what if I forget something? What if I leave something out? And he said, Maria, have you ever fallen and scraped your knee on cement? I'm like, ask me if I've ever fallen. I'm extraordinarily good at it. So you can laugh at that. All right, anyway, maybe it wasn't that funny. So, he said, you know when you fall on the cement and you scrape your knee and like you get pieces of asphalt are in there and rocks and stuff like that? He goes, what do you do first? You stand up and you wipe off the big rocks. And after you wipe off the big rocks, you can see the smaller rocks. And then you can see the little ones that you really have to like pick out. So don't worry if you leave anything out, because when it's time for you to see it, you will see it. So that lovely man And then I had to, give him my fifth step. Come on, you said it with so much passion before. Okay, thank you. And I did. And I told him everything. And how many of you, when you heard about the fourth step, said, I will tell them anything, but this one thing I will not say. Ding, 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 ding. And I had that one. I will go to my grave and no one will ever know I did this. I told him. He didn't flinch. And then he told me a story. He said, you know, Maria, there's an old story about an old timer who took the fourth step, with his sponsee. And I'm going to clean up the story a little bit, okay? The sponsee said to him, I can't believe I'm going to tell you this, but I kissed a chicken. And the sponsor looked at him and said, oh yeah, was yours alive or dead? Okay? It doesn't matter. Because if you're giving your fourth step away to someone, by the way, they've already given theirs away. So they know. Now, I just want to say that this is what is happening to me every time I share. I have like 5 minutes left and six steps to go. Ding. All right. Six and seven, I'm going to say nothing about. Eight, I'm going to tell you one thing about. Eight and nine, they go together, okay? Eight and nine. I knew that nine was going to save my life. Ding, ding, okay. I knew it. And as soon as I heard what making amends was, I knew exactly which one I needed to make because I had been keeping a secret for years. And I thought, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. I've been ghosting this person forever. I can't do it. The word ghosting didn't even exist then. And, but I did. I called her up. It was a woman I was supposed to help when I was in high school, and I just like stopped going to see her. Never called her, never did anything. And do you know what she said when I made my amends? She said, oh, Maria, I've been thinking about you. She received my amends. My life changed at that moment. Because, you know, before step nine, I spent my life covering my tush and looking over my shoulder. Guess what happens when you're covering your tush and looking over your shoulder? You fall over and you can't walk forward. You can't move ahead. But I could now. So, after that step nine. Now, okay, so that was like in 1994. Now, this is a call for never giving up. I did that ninth step in 1994. Guess when I started doing a regular 10th step? Year and a half ago. Couldn't do it. Would ask people, but just never. It's not like I didn't have the willingness. It's like I'd say I would do it and I'd go, I didn't do it. So, believe it or not, in the interim, I, between 1994 and 2019, I found another program. It doesn't matter what that program is, but what that program taught me was there were a lot more things that weren't moral issues that I was blaming myself for. And the one person that I had to make amends to was me. So I did. And as soon as I could stop trying to be perfect and blaming myself for all the things that were wrong with me, I started doing a 10-step. All right, now, okay. There's like, 11 and 12. I have a minute left. Does anyone mind if I go a couple minutes over? Is that okay? I don't mean to be all self-centered. It's not about me. It's about the steps. Okay, but I promise it's not gonna take me 20 minutes to get through 11 and 12. Ding, 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 ding. All right. So, 10, we continue to take a personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. Okay, speaks for itself. We do it over and over and over again. But the way I could get to doing a 10th step, ding, 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 was because when I could see those things on the page, those mistakes I had made, and I realized they weren't me, they weren't me. I wasn't afraid to look at them anymore. I didn't look at those things I did and say, I yelled at my kids, I lied to someone, I snubbed someone, I acted like I wanted to be friends with someone, but I really didn't. I mean, the amends keep coming, the things to make amends about. But I could look at those on a page and say, oh, those aren't me. Those are things. I ask forgiveness, I make my amends, I move on. It's not scary for me to do my 10th step every morning. I do mine in the morning because my brain is for poo-poo at night. All right, now, here we go. I'm moving on, 11. 11! 11! Okay, all right. Prayer and meditation. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God. Okay? Our conscious contact. Guess what that means? There's contact whether we're conscious of it or not. And actually, I want to say something because I feel like I'm speaking about a very singular idea of a higher power, and I am not. Pick a doorknob. Pick the power of the group. Just let it be not you. You are not responsible for saving your own life. And I'm going to read one thing on the I'm going to read one thing that it talks about 11 and 12, if I can find it. Yeah, and if I can't, we're just going to skip it. It says in the big book, there it is, that once we start praying, meditating, asking a higher power, asking someone, not me, to help me with my life and my decisions, it says, our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane. I didn't come into OA to have my thought life moved to a much higher plane. But you know what? It is, and it's worth it. It is, and it's worth it. Another thing the big book says is prayer, it's like intuition, right? We come to rely upon it. This is true. This is true. It has been true for me, and it has saved my butt a lot of times. Okay. Finally, step 12.
Amen.
Amen. Thank God she's almost done. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, the result. We tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. There's a lot of ways I could go with this. You heard a lot about service and why it's so important, and it is. But I want to say this. The step says we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It doesn't say we succeeded. The point is we keep trying. And sometimes we succeed and sometimes we don't. You know, I thought I was going to end on a much more dramatic note. And this is totally different than what I thought I was going to say. But what I want to say is this. Thank you for saving my life today. That's all.
Thank you, Maria, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. What a great start. I just lost my place. Hold on. Sorry about that. We hope that you are all settled in and are ready for a great convention. The registration desk with service sign up will be open from 9:15 to 10 p.m. tonight and reopen tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. After the closing, we will have tonight's raffles and then to our talent show. Please join us here. We will now close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.